Quality sleep is essential. That's why the Sleep Number Smart Bed is designed for your ever-evolving sleep needs. Need a bed that's firmer or softer on either side? Helps you sleep at a comfortable temperature? Sleep Number Smart Beds let you individualize your comfort, so you sleep better together. J.D. Power ranks Sleep Number number one in customer satisfaction with mattresses purchased in-store. And now, save 40% on the Sleep Number Limited Edition Smart Bed for a limited time. For J.D. Power 2023 award information, visit jdpower.com/awards. Only at Sleep Number stores or sleepnumber.com.
Welcome to Garden Better, your gardens and outdoor lifestyle podcast from Better Homes and Gardens magazine. I'm Adam Woodhams, and with me is Jenny Dillon.
Hi, Adam. How are you?
I'm fantastic, thanks. We've got a great episode coming up for you today.
And what are we going to be talking about, Adam?
We are going to be having a look at waking your garden up after winter. All of those classic spring garden tasks that will help see your garden across through into summer. And then I reckon we need to have a look at what goes on in the garden after dark, Jen.
Oh, good. I like that one.
Well, we're going to have a look at garden lighting anyway.
Yeah. Well, I reckon at this time of the year, there's absolutely no way you can restrain people from getting out. I mean, after winter, it's cold, it's wet, we hate it. I'm just bursting at the seams to get out there.
Well, then we better make sure that the garden is worth getting into. So, shall we get into it?
Mm-hmm. First things first.
So after a rough old winter, chances are your garden is looking a bit worse for wear. And I must admit, it looks like we're staring down the barrel of a possibility of a long, hot summer, doesn't it, Jen?
Yeah, it's like a kid's bedroom. You've got to get in there every once in a while and tidy it up. And who knows what you're going to find.
Sometimes those important things that you wanted to find, and other times not so much. Mm-hmm. So look, I reckon some simple tips for getting your garden looking awesome. And that's the key, isn't it? Because we really want to make sure it's nice and easy and simple.
Well, it's so important to do it this time of the year. It's not hot, it's warm, it's comfortable. You can do all the legwork, all the hard work right now, so that come summertime, all you have to do is turn on the sprinkler, if you're allowed.
If you're allowed to. Yeah, well, and I kind of think of the work you're doing now as being an investment as well, because you're laying down those foundation tasks that are going to make sure that the garden is performing well and looking great across summer. But to me, the first thing all round, and I know this sounds a bit old school, but get out there and tidy up. Rake and sweep, and raking the lawn, for example, your lawn can look terrible after winter. Go over it with a wire leaf rake. Now, not one of the plastic ones, but one of the ones that has the spring tines, those wire tines. Go over your lawn with one of those, and I have to tell you, the lawn will look $1 million afterwards, because not only will you get rid of all the loose material that's fallen, all the leaves and twigs and all that sort of stuff, but what it will do is it will lightly scratch out all of the dead foliage that's built up over winter. So you get rid of the dead leaves and you're left with the nice green stuff, and hopefully, unless your lawn has gone really badly over winter, hopefully your lawn will still look reasonably good afterwards. So it makes an incredible improvement, and you'll be surprised how much comes out. You can end up with little mounds of just dead foliage that you've raked out over even a relatively small area.
And your lawn will look like it's just come back from the beauty salon.
Basically, yes. Oh. It's kind of like a lawn manicure or something, isn't it?
Yeah.
Yes. But, of course, you can, if you wish, use the blower. Blowers are one of those very contentious things.
No, you don't use the blower. Sorry. Putting my foot down.
Hey, can I tell you?
No, don't interrupt. I'm very, very firm about this. You don't use the blower. You can get them now with a vacuum.
Oh, well, that is very true. You can get them with the vac, but you can use the blower to push everything to one spot and then you vacuum it up.
Vacuum up as you go.
I must tell you, there is obviously a lot of interest in leaf blowers, though. Because that's my single most popular video on my YouTube channel is my how to use a leaf blower. Get along with your neighbours.
I've got a term for men who use leaf blowers, and it's not flattering. And I used it on my neighbour once.
Well, we might move on to pruning off spent flowers then. That's one of the other things you could do, of course. There's things that have been flowering in early spring and across winter that you want to prune them off to get everything nice and neat and organised again. Mm-hmm. But we had a bit of a talk about feeding in a recent episode, and it's important to remember that now is a great time for feeding.
That's right. So if you feed now, that'll keep you going for the next couple of months.
And one of the important things, of course, is to get into the pruning, because there's lots and lots of bits and pieces out there that do need to be pruned. A light hedge cut. I was trying to say hedge and haircut at the same time, and I got a hedge cut.
You got a new word.
I'm a writer. I'm allowed to invent words.
You're also a horticulturist, and we tend to make up words.
It's our job. Yeah, we do. Hey, let's add some Greek and some Latin, and let's call it a new word.
Yeah. Yes.
So, no, it is a good time to be pruning, particularly if you've got hedges and topiary and things like that, because they can be starting to look a bit shaggy, can't they?
Well, they look really shaggy. Growth through winter is very erratic. You never know what's happening. And also, you've got to get things into shape, because growth becomes really strong over summer. So you just lay the bones for what you want things to look like.
Well, that's it. And the point that really nails it completely, because things have become a little bit sparse over winter, and then they put on that new flush of growth. And if you don't give them a nice haircut, then you tend to end up with that very much the outward growth without getting the coverage of anything that's looking sparse inside. But give it that light prune and you get multiple branching off from that cut, and that tends to disguise any stragginess that's happening on the inside. So, yes, certainly a great time. And we've chatted too about mulching. Now's a good time to be mulching before it warms up too much. Watering, you know, that we've had, a lot of the country's had a very dry winter, so it's a good time to be trying to get some deep watering in, assuming that you're allowed to in your region.
Well, it's a problem. There's a lot of regions where there are, you know, huge water restrictions. You can't water after 10 o'clock or before 4 o'clock. You can't use a sprinkler. There's all sorts of restrictions, so you've really got to sort of engage all your water-saving tactics.
Well, I think in an upcoming episode we need to have a chat about some great ideas for how to conserve water in the garden and make good use of it. Now, also, it is still a very good time to be planting, because the soil's just starting to warm up and it's not too hot.
It's the best time for planting. Actually, this time and autumn, depending on where you are, it's comfortable in the garden. You're not putting on a sweat. And, yes, the soil is warm and the plants just want to get going.
Yeah, well, they're naturally putting out that growth at this time, which is one of the big advantages of it. And the soil's just starting to warm up. The days are getting a little bit longer. And one of the things that I really do like to drive home too is that get out of that sort of frame of mind that all of this stuff that you've done with the pruning and the clippings that have fallen and the stuff you raked off the lawn and all that stuff that you've swept up in your blower, whether you've blown it or whether you've swept it up with the blower, all of that stuff, it's not waste. Don't think of this stuff as waste, because it can be very useful. If you've got a compost heap, you can be putting all of that onto the compost, and within a couple of months it's going to be fantastic stuff to go back into your garden. Or you can even use it, a lot of it can be used immediately as mulch.
As mulch, yeah. If you're a gardener, you've got a compost. Or you've got a worm farm, or you've got some sort of little bucket where things break down.
Yes, it's crazy not to, really, because you're generally collecting this stuff and sending it off to the council, you know, in your green waste bin or whatever the case may be. And then you're going to a shop and buying the same sort of stuff in a bag.
And bringing it back home again.
So just cut the middleman out. Do it yourself.
So little work involved in composting. Just sort of, you know, get out there with a fork and turn it over every now and then.
That's it.
Throw the hose on it.
And all this stuff at this time of year, beautiful time to be working
in
the garden.
Gorgeous. Yeah, absolutely.
After dark, Jen.
Oh, don't get me started.
Well, all too often, though, our gardens, you know, we love them. We love our outdoor spaces. We love our decks. We love our lawns. And then the sun goes down and suddenly we all shuffle back inside and we don't do anything. But there is an easy way around that, isn't there?
Yeah. You light up your garden.
Light up your garden. Now, back when I was a kid, that was a long time ago. That's why I left a big pause. Back when I was a kid, lighting up your garden involved some really daggy festoon lights of just typical incandescent globes on a long string that always looked really dodgy, held up with a couple of galvanized nails. Or it'd be a fluorescent tube that would be equally dodgily erected and hung up over the outdoor area. And that was about the option, wasn't it?
Well, it was. And that's why you never saw a single woman out there with you.
No.
That lighting didn't do their features any good at all.
That's exactly right. I never thought about that. There you are. That explains it. Mm-hmm. Oh, there's probably other things in my case. But anyway, the other option too, of course, though, was the classic outdoor, you know, par 38, I think they were, the big old floodlights, you know, the Porter flood globes. And again, but you're right, very unflattering. Definitely not mood lighting, was it?
Right, and certainly not one way to engage with your neighbours. They'd be hating you for that.
That's right. You angle that floodlight the wrong way and, yes. and they're awake all night as well as you are. But that's all changed because garden lighting has moved on in leaps and bounds. And in fact, just in the last few years, we've seen some incredible changes thanks to LED technology.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Mm-hmm.
So some of the stuff you can do is just fantastic. I particularly like the way you can basically – well, I'll go backwards a little bit on that. There's two types of lighting. We were joking before about the rest of that lighting. That's what I call amenity lighting. You know, that sort of lighting where you are functionally lighting a space up.
Yeah.
And then there's the decorative lighting or that very much the accessorizing the garden. So you're highlighting features and you're bordering pathways and doing all those sorts of things. And I think that's important when we start talking about garden lighting. We draw a line between the difference of the two of those because you do need different things at different times. You know, if you've got everybody around for a nice relaxing evening, then you want that very much that mood lighting. Whereas mm-hmm. if you're wanting to go out and take stuff off the washing line at night, you're going to still want that amenity lighting.
Yes.
And LED has made an enormous difference to both of those because the power consumption is so incredibly low. And this is the thing that blows me away. And I'll fall back on that example again of the PAR 38, that classic floodlight globe. Now, normally they used to be 100 or 110 watt globes, which is a fair bit of power to chew up. You switch something like that over now to LED and you're looking at only 8 to 14 watts of power consumption. So it does actually become viable to run a little bit more lighting outdoors without worrying too much about power use, which everybody these days is obviously deeply concerned about.
Yeah, and also you can use it in so many different subtle ways, you know, and so you're not actually turning night into day, which was always the danger in the past. You can also use it, you know, in a very artistic way to highlight things that you don't notice during the daylight hours because you're looking at different aspects of things. You can put a little light in the middle of a bush and it makes it glow, or you could put it behind a bush and it makes it sort of gives it a lovely ghostly outline.
Well, and particularly if you've got a tree with a slightly lifted canopy, you know, you've got that ability to be putting the light up the front of the trunk and showing off the framework of the branches, which you otherwise might not see at all.
And cast some wonderful shadows as well.
Yes,
so much different from the daylight shadows.
Yes, indeed. And of course, there's things like fairy lights, you know, that you can use for highlighting the framework of a tree
you're not
a fan of the fairy lights?
No, can we please stop having the fairy lights?
Oh, I kind of like them though.
Oh, you're just a little boy.
But one of the big advantages too with this sort of gear all switching now to LED is that solar became a lot more viable. So it means you can have these self-contained units. You don't have all the trouble of having to run leads and get a Sparky to install an outdoor PowerPoint and all that sort of stuff. So you can basically at the furthermost corner of the yard set up a little solar spotlight or some fairy lights, whichever takes your fancy.
I'll set the possums on you if you're not careful.
Set the possums on the fairy lights.
Yes.
But I suppose the biggest advantage of that is that the old outdoor lighting systems tend to use halogens, for example, for the spotlights, and you were very limited. You'd have a really big transformer and you'd only be able to connect, you know, two or three or four spotlights to it and maybe a couple of little path lights. But now when you're talking LED, you can be connecting a dozen or more lights to one transformer. And in fact, you can go a lot more beyond that. But you have that advantage now, of course, of not needing multiple transformers. You can just be running virtually an entire garden off a single transformer.
Off a single one, yeah.
I think, too, another great one is the advantages of colour changing. It's no longer just a bright white or a warm white. You can actually basically go through any colour that you want to go through. And, Jen, you're just looking at me in absolute horror when I'm talking about you.
I am. I mean... You've got the colour in the garden during the day and it's stunning. Just, you know, just be subtle in the evenings, you know, and enjoy other people's company.
But I don't
know. You know, light up the conversation, not up the garden that way.
You can use
colourful language rather than colourful lights. Oh, okay.
I think we're going to have a definite line of difference on this one, aren't we, Jen?
We certainly are.
I like that. Let's call it novelty value. But I like that novelty value of being able to cycle through different colours or to highlight shrubs green.
I have a problem because I don't even do Christmas lights.
Oh, I see. This is – okay. Lay back on the couch there, Jen. We're getting back to a deep problem with Christmas. This is what it's all about, isn't it?
I never got enough presents.
But now think of the things you can do with, like you mentioned before, you could uplight into a bush. I mean, you could actually, you use a red coloured light, you turn it into the burning bush. You could do all sorts of weird and wonderful things with colour.
That's very biblical of you, isn't it? No, I just think a light should be used far more subtly, you know, just one utility guide your way and to highlight, you know, turn it into an art thing, you know, not a kaleidoscopic psychedelic poster.
Well, I think, though, that our conversation and our differences on this have, but it's proved a really good point. It's proved exactly how versatile modern garden lighting actually is.
And you can do anything.
Yeah, you can go from switching in the space of literally the blink of an eye, because a lot of this stuff now can be app controlled as well, that you can go from delicate, subtle, warm whites and highlighting frameworks of plants to suddenly you're at the Copacabana and you're going crazy.
Can I just make one suggestion, one place where you keep the lights out, and that's the cubby house.
Yes. Why? What happens in the cubby house, Jen? I'm deeply concerned about this. Oh, you don't want the kids in the cubby house. You want to keep the kids out of the cubby house.
The kids are in bed.
Oh, very true. Okay. Hey, well, look, I reckon we need to bring in an expert on this, and let's have a chat with someone that knows a lot more about outdoor lighting than you and I.
Okay.
And welcome Matt Wichman from Holman Garden Lighting. Look, thanks for joining us. Now, a lot of people may well know Holman from your extensive range of watering equipment, but you guys have taken the natural step now of branching out into garden lighting. Is that correct?
Yeah, that's right, Adam. Well, in fact, Holman did garden lighting many years ago. The business was heavily invested in the 90s and had a great range back then. Many things have changed since then. Newer technology, better lights, and a safer way of connecting cabling has sparked our old passion for garden lights again. So about 2 years ago, we released a new range of Bluetooth garden lights.
It's certainly a growing sector, isn't it? Because people are just starting to make a lot more use of their outdoors. And Jen, my co-host, and I were chatting earlier about amenity and feature lighting, you know, that difference between the lighting to, put it a different way, functional lighting and decorative lighting. Now, where do you see the starting point is when people are starting to design or put together their lighting for outdoors?
Yeah, look, garden lighting can be so versatile, and there's many different ways and techniques that you can use depending on your garden and your space. We recommend starting by identifying a feature item in your garden, so like an ornamented tree or a decorative wall, and uplighting them with spotlights. Such an easy way to make your house stand out in the street. Paths, driveways, and stairs can be illuminated with our path lights or deck lights for function and safety. So really, really good, and there's so many ways really to get into it.
I think the beauty is that lighting lets you expand on your outdoor space, doesn't it? That's the reality of it, that without using some quality outdoor or garden lighting, that your outdoor space sort of ends at the edge of the deck. You know, you've suddenly got that ability where you can turn on that area after dark and still retain use because you can safely light the steps. You can have that lighting along a pathway. And then, as you said, you know, even just something as simple as having a spotlight shining up a wall suddenly can turn that wall into a beautiful feature after dark.
Yeah, absolutely. Oh, especially our spring and summer evenings are just so beautiful. And you really don't want to spend them indoors, especially if you've got your friends and family over for a barbecue or playing outdoor cricket. So just after an easy DIY weekend, setting up the garden lights is super easy, and you can use them, you know, playing cricket in the outdoors, not losing the ball. And it doesn't need much, you know, a couple of lights will do the job really, and they're great for that.
Yeah, and that was the question I was going to ask, the ease of DIY installation. I suppose that because all of your gear, for example, is low voltage, so that means that as long as folks have a suitable outdoor power point, it makes it very easy for them to be plugging into that and creating that outdoor lighting, isn't it?
Yeah, and that was really the game changer for us. The low voltage, 12 volt. So you don't need to have a Sparky run to set up your garden lights. All the cabling is a really simple plug and socket system. So you can have actually the control and the lights going while you set up the lights, which makes it really easy to identify your design because you've got the lights on while you're doing it. And it's easy to bury the cables and it's DIY safe, really easy to do.
Well, and the beauty too, of course, now is that systems such as yours are app controlled so that you just install a base station and then your phone can talk to the lighting system and you can be making all sorts of changes. So what sort of changes can people make through their phone? So they just basically pull up an app and then they can do what with their lighting?
Well, that's right. So it's basically just a controller that functions also as a transformer, and you control everything from your smartphone. So from the brightness of your light, the colors of the lights for the RGB lights, dimmable, run cycles and scenes through them. So if you have a party on, you might just want to put the party mode on, and you can also automate your on and off times. So have the lights on when you want and have them off when you want.
Yeah, that's very cool, isn't it? Because you could, in fact, use that as well for home security, that you could have it looking like somebody's around the outdoors at night by turning the lights on and off. But I must admit, I love the idea of the color changing. You know, I mentioned before the idea of just shining a spotlight up a wall. And if you then have that changing multiple colors, you can, it's like you're painting a wall 15 different colors in one night.
Absolutely. And it's actually really good fun. Once you've got the kids out in the garden and they see the lights change and see it all happening from your phone, they get really engaged. But really like music, color lighting is a great way of set the mood for your outdoor evening. Have them red, have them purple. In fact, having a plum tree or a cherry tree in a nice purple looks amazing.
Yeah, I recall having seen, I don't know if you've ever been to Floriade down in Canberra, where they have their incredible night showing of the all the various bulbs, the flowering, spring flowering bulbs, and they do them with different colours, and it just adds a completely different aspect to a coloured tree or a flowering tree of some sort when you throw a different coloured light onto it. It's quite incredible.
It certainly transforms your home, and that's really what we find is if you walk along the street in your neighbourhood, the houses that are lit up stand out fantastically and really makes a $1 million home.
Yeah, no, I couldn't agree more. Now, look, just as we start to wrap up, do you have a few tips? What are your favourite tips for people if they're thinking about installing lighting and the best way to use it and how they can get the most from lighting at their place?
I think start simple. Get a couple of spotlights, have nice trees or even buildings or features you want to light up, and just light up the nice things in your garden. Bit of spotlights around the garden. Go for RGB lighting, which has a nice flare and changes it over Christmas really nice, or warm white for the more classic way. But really start simple. Have path lights for your pathways, a bit for security reasons as well, so you don't trip over. There's so many ways, and yet again with the plug and socket system, it's so easy to expand as well. So you might want to only start with two or four lights and then expand as you go, the more confident you get with the system.
Well, thank you very much, Matt Wichman. I must say it's been, dare I say it, enlightening. And for more info on Holman Outdoor Lighting, just drop by their webpage at holmanindustries.com.au. Thanks, Matt.
Thanks, Adam. Cheers.
Gardening by the Moon with Milton Black.
Hi, Milton. How are you today?
Oh, very well, Jan. And what a funny sort of a week this is for planting.
Yeah.
This week, of course, we're looking at planting below the ground.
Right.
So those are things like carrots, radishes, your garlic, anything that grows below, the tumours that grow below the ground. Mm-hmm. And what a great week it is for transplanting too. So you can transplant all those little out of your seed box into your garden. Mm-hmm. Or alternatively, you can transplant your trees and your shrubs as well. Today, on the 14th, of course, is a full moon in Aries. So you just do not do any planting today. The full moon is an absolute no-no. From the new moon to the full moon, you plant above ground crops. The full moon down to the next new moon or the last quarter, you're planting below ground crops. So
right.
on Tuesday, the moon goes into the semi-fertile sign of Taurus at 2:24 mm-hmm. in the morning. Okay. So you can get up early in the morning, about 7, 8 o'clock, while the wind's down and it's a nice morning, go out there and do some planting in your garden. Tuesday and Wednesday is fabulous days for gardening, particularly below ground crops. You can put your potatoes, you can put your radishes, your beetroot, anything that grows below the ground. Also, those are good days for transplanting as well. But a good day for transplanting really is when the moon goes into Gemini at 2:30 p.m. on Thursday, and then it stays in there on Friday. Now, those are two non-fertile signs, but good signs for actually transplanting things. So if you want to transplant, the best day really would probably be Friday, but you can do it on Thursday too if you want to, and you can do trees as well.
Yeah.
But the moon enters in Cancer on Saturday and Sunday. Now, Saturday the 19th and Sunday the 20th, fabulous days for the garden, but only below ground crops.
Right.
That go in on those days. Now, you can also do a little bit of fertilizing if you want to, but just very, very light on those days. And if you want to do a bit of pruning, the best days for pruning this week would be around Thursday and Friday in the two non-fertile signs of Gemini. So just a little bit of light pruning there. I think this is a fabulous week for all those below ground crops. And you can enjoy that tremendously. And don't forget, our good friend, white vinegar,
yes,
mixed with water, is excellent for around the garden. And this will kill all your little bugs and things like that too. So get that all prepared, because next week we're going to talk about sprays and what have you. But you can prepare it this week on those 2 days, actually, of Thursday and Friday. You can prepare your garden for next week. But I do feel this week is just superb for below ground crops. Now, just one thing too, Jen, mm-hmm. from the moon when it moves into Cancer on the 19th and 20th, of course, that is the good days we mentioned for below ground crops. But on the 21st, that's the last quarter of the moon, which is in Cancer, which is a fertile sign, but we don't plant on the last quarter. What you do now is get all those sprays out that you want to spray and spray all your plants from the 22nd right through until the 27th. Now, that's your big, big pruning time as well.
Right.
So the moon's going to enter into Leo on Tuesday the 22nd, and it stays in Leo on the 23rd. And those are two perfect days for weed and feed. And also the moon in Virgo on the 24th and 25th, those are non-fertile signs as well. Absolutely superb for heavy pruning, spraying and spreading compost. And the moon enters Libra on the 26th. Now, that is a fertile sign, but you don't plant when the moon's on that last quarter of the cycle.
Right.
And so the 28th and the 27th are going to be days where you continue on with your pruning and your weeding and your spraying, and you don't plant lawns on those days either, right through this week from the 21st through to the 27th. What you do is you prepare your lawns. So you turn your soil, you get it, rake off all the little stones, get everything ready and ready to plant on the following period from the 28th onwards. So we'll talk about that next time. Now, just as a matter of interest,
mm-hmm.
what do you call a tick on the moon? It's a lunatic.
A lunatic. Brilliant. Thanks, Milton. See you soon.
Well, that was another great episode, Jen. What do you reckon?
Certainly was, Adam. And we'll be back in 2 weeks' time with more garden chat. But in the meantime, where can people find you?
Well, the easiest way is to jump onto YouTube and just search Adam Woodhams, and they'll find my channel there with all sorts of videos on garden things and DIY and landscape and other odds and ends there.
Fantastic. And if you want more garden inspiration before the next episode, follow us on Instagram. You can find us at BHGAUS.
If you enjoyed this episode of Garden Better, then please take a moment to rate and review the show, and don't forget to press that big old subscribe button. It's the best way to stay in touch with what we're doing and make sure you keep on top of every single episode. So we'll see you next time, Jen.
You bet.
Hold up. Even when we're on a budget, we still deserve nice things. Quince is a place to scoop up stunning high-end goods for 50 to 80% less than similar brands. They have buttery soft cashmere sweaters starting at $50, luxurious Italian leather bags, and so much more. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Get the high-end goods you'll love without the high price tag with Quince. Go to quince.com/style for free shipping and 365-day returns.